So I'm going to introduce our guest speaker now. So our guest speaker is Dr. Patricia Wirikoon. So please come up, Patricia. And I've just got a few questions I thought I'd ask her by way of getting to know her a bit. So firstly, thank you so much for coming.
You're most welcome. Great to be here with you.
Just so that we can get to know you a little bit, can you just talk about your family, your upbringing, Where you're from and things like that?
I'm originally from Sri Lanka. It's nice to see one more Sri Lankan here. And I have one husband and one son, trained in medicine in Sri Lanka, joined the university there, and I was the only female at that time in the department for physiology, so I was it to teach reproduction and sex. Very primitive sex, that was 1975. So, and then I did my post-grad study in Hawaii, where I worked with this wonderful man, Jewish man, who was the world-renowned expert in gender. And so that's where I actually started thinking, oh, sex, right, sex. So from there on, I went back to Sri Lanka, and my husband and I belong to the two ethnic groups who are not very happy with each other in Sri Lanka. So things were a bit rough in Sri Lanka. But it was also a very interesting time because suddenly I found myself as the only sex therapist in Sri Lanka. And when there's 18 million population, that's a very interesting place to be. And then when the troubles were sort of at a point, our son was 13 and we thought we should actually get him out of there. So we moved to Australia, and that really turned out to be God's really gracious hand on him, particularly because he was ordained last Friday as a Presbyterian minister. So that was a real blessing. Having gone from being baptized as a Methodist to being dedicated as a Southern Baptist and then confirmed as an Anglican and sworn in as a Salvation Army soldier and gone to Moore College, he ended up as a Presbyterian. So there must be something.
Son of a sexologist.
Something there, you know. Yeah, so that's my family background.
Thank you so much. Yes, you are a strong Christian. You have an active faith. How does that impact with your work? I mean, how do people see you as a Christian and yet working in an area where traditionally...
You mean as a sex worker?
Yeah. Well, your call there.
Okay. Well, I guess the best thing I can tell you is what happened once when a couple of years ago I was on study leave in America at what's called the Kinsey Institute. Some of you have heard this story already this morning. And the director there is a friend of mine. Kinsey Institute's in Indiana, and that's like Bible Belt America, and they were sort of under threat where people wanted them closed. And he said, look, you know, how can you be a Christian and say that you're a sex therapist or a researcher? And I said, you know, John, you and I research and study and teach sex. I just have the advantage of having a personal relationship with the creator of sex. And you see, that's the wonder of it all, that all of us as Christians have that personal relationship with a God who creates everything perfect. And perfect sex and sexuality and sexual behavior, our bodies as sexual beings are a perfect creation. Of course we are in a broken world and therefore things get really messed up. But you see, Satan can't create anything. All he takes is this perfect sex and then, you know, perverts it and tries to destroy it. But he never can because it's God's creation. And, you know, that's as simple as it is. We as Christians really have the answer to best sex ever, and we should be out and proud in telling people about it.
I find when I, you know, have to introduce myself or I get into a taxi or get onto a bus and someone asks me what I do, I often get strange looks when I say I'm a minister or I work for the church or something like that. I'm just wondering how you go introducing yourself in situations like that.
When someone asks what do you do, I say I work in sex. And then they sort of, you know, if it's a taxi driver, you sort of see him looking at the mirror and thinking, no. I don't think so. I'm just going straight to the airport. So, you know, closed.
friends, let's put our hands together.
Thank you. It's really great to be here. So what we're going to do today is actually a little factual. So I'm going to give you a fairly dense factual 40 minutes. So you'll have to sort of bear with me during this, because there is a lot of information. A lot of the information we are going to talk about today is couched in the fact that we are Christians and we have the truth. And therefore we can talk to our children about this wonderful message of sexuality with the confidence of knowing that we are sexual beings and sex is a good, gracious gift. However, what I will also be giving you is a lot of information about age-specific sexuality and what their development is like and what we as parents can do at particular ages and groups. And this is why you have a handout, so that you don't have to worry about, oh, I'll never be able to remember all that, because really important stuff is there. Now, we do have extra handouts, so if you think that, you know, someone in your church or somebody would like some of those, I'm sure they won't mind if you pick up a few when you're leaving. Okay, so let's get straight in. You see, we Christians generally get a really bad rap when it comes to sex education. Because we hear constantly, that's kind of thing we hear people talk about when it comes to sex education. I just pulled this off the web. You know, they think the church says, just don't do it. And therefore you read things. I just pulled this off. This is what the secular media says, the church says about sex. I mean, sex. I love the one in the second one just above the couple. Gay and straight teens alike can avoid eternal hellfire by saving sex for man-woman marriage. Or the one with the rings. Keep your hands to yourself in style. Silver saving it rings emit purity-packed virgin ores, proven to kill all crabs, gay germs and hormone-producing sex glands. So, you know, this is a kind of tongue-in-cheek media message which says sex and Christians do not mix. Christians just say don't do it. And so we have a duty to face the world and say, look, we truly have the message, not what is out there. You see, the media will portray sex as attractive. The youngest of children are exposed to sexual messages. And this is just a few things that I picked up. I mean, the photograph on, she in front of a car with the hamburger, that's actually an advertisement selling hamburgers. I think that's Paris Hilton. And she's selling, that's advertising hamburgers. And, you know, it's not just McDonald's, it's Paris Hilton. And you know the messages, the sort of subliminal messages that are portrayed there. And I'm sure some of you at least would have seen the Bratz dolls. And this is for really little kids. Very sexual, sensual dress. If you look at the one in black, that's really like bondage. That is dressed in leather and that's bondage wear. So, you know, it's just so much. And of course we know the Twilight phenomenon and the Dolly sex messages. This is the sex education that children see. And then of course we have Britney Spears. So, you know, I thought it would be really good if we have Britney Spears actually come and perform for us. So I've got Britney to come and perform for us today. And what I'm going to do is, while Britney performs for us, I'm going to, because it's really hard to get those words, I'm going to read the words of this song. And it's called 1, 2, 3, and some of your children may be actually singing it. It sounds like they're studying arithmetic, you know, 1, 2, 3, and not just you and me. But let me just get Brittany going, and then we'll read this. And I want you to just see the kind of things your kids are going to be watching. Okay, it goes 1, 2, 3, not only you and me. Got 180 degrees and I'm caught in between, counting 1, 2, 3, Peter, Paul and Mary getting down with three persons, everybody loving and counting. Babe, pick a night to come out and play. If it's all right, what do you say? Merrier, merrier, the more, triple fun. That way, Twister on the floor, what do you say? Are you in living in sin? That's the new thing. Are you? I'm counting. Three is a charm. Two's not the same. I don't see the harm. So you game? Let's make a team. Make him say my name, loving, in the very extreme. Are you game? What we do is innocent, just for fun. Nothing meant. If you don't like the company, then just let's do it, you and me. You and me. Or two, or three, or four, maybe on the floor. That's the kind of songs, and that's the kind of subliminal messages our children are getting. And you see, that's a very catchy tune. I listened to it, and without my own knowledge, you know, I was cooking up, then going, whoops, you know, and that's just... So it's so catchy. And for kids, it's like, you know, one, two, three, just you and me. But the actual messages are very sensual. And these are the messages that the media will give your children. So, why then is the church, this is what the media, why are we interested? Like I was saying before, you know, sex is a gift. You know, when God gave us, when God made man and woman, when God created man and woman, put them in the garden, had a look and say, whoa, that is so good. He then said, okay, here's your command, go out there and procreate and fill the earth, be fruitful, fill the earth. And I love the fact that most of you have like threes and fours and 11 babies, because it's really filling the earth, procreating and filling the earth. But isn't it wonderful that God, in just giving a command, you know, go out there and make babies, could have been so boring? But in fact, going out and making babies became quite a really pleasurable thing. So God not just gave a command, but he also made it real fun. Because, you know, the last time I looked, the only way you made babies was by sexual intercourse. And so God made it such that it's real fun. So we have a wonderful gift, this gift of sex. But it is also a very fragile and precious gift. And it's a gift that, you know, when our children are growing up, we are the ones who nurture them to appreciate this gift, this wonderful, precious gift. And so you, as parents, you know, whether you're holding a 5-week-old or a 10-year-old or whatever age in your arms, you are laying the foundation of your children's future life. So, given that I'm a sex educator and a therapist, why am I interested? Why am I doing this? Why do I accept invitations to leave beautiful Sydney to come up north to Brisbane, you know? And, oh, you're beautiful. I mean, we are the ones who are down south Mexicans. But why do I accept these invitations to come to places and leave my poor 62-year-old husband there and come over here and talk to people about this? It is because I am passionate in the fact that sex is really caught and taught at home. But what you do, what you say as parents, as grandparents, and I would challenge you as a church to be actually parenting all the children in the church. Because after all, when there is a baptism or a christening, we as a body of Christ accept the responsibility. So you know, you have a role in actually nurturing the children in the church when you promise to nurture the children. And so we have a responsibility, as this little girl, or yeah, the little girl says, well, after the sex education, well, that explains all the giggling in the room every night, you know, because there wasn't much that was caught. So, you know, it's the danger is that we can think that our children are okay. You know, our children are growing up in a Christian home. We take them to Sunday school. And after all, schools have sex education programs. So shouldn't they be learning these things? I'm sure they're learning it. I mean, you know, I don't know whether you've got to sign the papers, but we signed it off and we're learning it. So we sort of tend to think our children are okay. However, things happen in the best Christian families, you know, where he says, so you're pregnant, how could this happen? I mean, I brought you up as a Christian, you know, we went to Sunday school, and the girl thinking, well, if you guys don't know, then I must be adopted. You know, so as Australians, and as I told you, I'm sorry, but I'm going to just dump a little bit of information on you because I think it's necessary. Should we be concerned? I mean, as Australians, it's one of my favorite pictures, and I love using this in international conferences. I mean, you know, they like just get so love it so much. If you don't understand it, I don't. Sorry, it's not. You know, not no explanations given on that one. So, some facts on sex, just so you can understand some of the things that are happening. The phenomenon of sexting and cyberbullying. 16% of young people have said, this is very recent statistics coming out of, I think it's an Australian research, 16% of young people said that they had been bullied online, and 14 said they had been bullied on their mobile phones. So the amount of bullying that is going on, and I'm sure you would have seen newspaper reports where bullying has even led to kids committing suicide, because it can be so feral, so cruel. Sexting is the other phenomenon, and sexting just basically means very explicit pictures being posted on the mobile phone, sometimes on the internet, but usually on the mobile phone. Let me just tell you a story. We had a young girl, a teenager, whose mother was dropping her off for a music lesson, and she just left her mobile phone in the car, and the mom was like, oh, you know, pick up the phone and just, you know. And there was this picture of her boyfriend's genitals with the text under it to say, when I'm like this, I'm thinking of you. Now, the mother, of course, freaked, and when a lot of our friends, when they freak about anything about to do with sex, it's about, call Pat! You know, it's like Superwoman to the roof. So, you know, sort of Auntie Pat was called, so Auntie Pat had to go. And so we had this meeting with the girl and her parents, and the mother said, you know, I saw your mobile phone and I switched it on. And you could see this girl's eyes just widen. She's 16. And the mom said, well, you know, there was this picture of the boy's genitals, and she said, oh, is that all? And we were like, okay. And she was like, oh, I thought you meant there was some swearing or something. And we're like, okay, so swearing is worse. So like, so what did you do? And she said, oh, well, first I showed it to my classmates. Right. So you see, that's the phenomenon. I mean, you know, the thing of like posting explicit pictures seems to be something that's okay behavior. And that's exactly what she said. But Auntie, everyone's doing it. It's like, where are we going when something like that becomes everyone's doing it? When research shows us that the majority of our young people, this is 2003, so going to be updated soon. The majority of our young people are sexually active, and this has significantly increased in the last decade, and that's up to 2003. We think it's gone up since then. You know, of a group of over 2,000, year 10 to 12, 80% said they'd been in deep kissing, 33% had said they had sex with a condom, and 20%, one-fifth, have had sex without a condom. Oral sex is basically treated as a party game, and this was told to me by a young person. Auntie, it's like a party game. You know, it's just, I'm sorry to shock you, but this is the truth. Sexually transmissible infections are really at an all-time high, and the recent research indicates that teen pregnancies, which were dropping, are now beginning to rise again, especially in Tasmania. Don't ask me why, but You know, it's just a bit of trivia, which I'm sure everybody needed to know. And chlamydia is a genital infection that is caused by a bacteria that is a major cause of infertility, and it's often symptomless. So girls can have sex, even men, boys, but often in girls it's symptomless. They can have chlamydia, and it's only detected when they are adults and they can't get pregnant. It's very, very frightening. If you look at those data, it's just rising so dramatically. Kids having unprotected sex, kids having oral sex and anal sex and saying that's not sex because only sexual intercourse is sex. Other research, you know, when we ask teens, what do you want to know, teenagers, what do you want to know? This was the kind of things they were saying they want to know. So, I mean, it's fairly standard things. They want facts, they want practical skills. But what I'm putting to you is they also say they want value clarification. They want to be taught values, not just information. And for goodness sake, we as Christians, we as Christian parents, we know the values. And yet, what is keeping us from nurturing our children in our values? When teenagers were asked, where would you prefer to receive information? This is information coming out of Canada, but there's no reason to think it's ours would be any different. This young people say, we would like to hear information about sexuality and values, and we would like to learn it from our parents. That's what the majority said. Then they said from school, and finally from peers. Then the question was asked, where are you actually getting your information? And for boys, the main source of information, and this again is American, British data, but I mean, just talking to young people here, it's no different here. The main source of information for boys is the peer group and pornography. The mean age when young people are exposed to pornography in Australia is 11 years. Children of 11, that's the age at which they are seeing porn. And it has a significant effect on the way they're growing up. Because when kids get into puberty, their brains are hormone driven, but their control mechanisms in the front of their brain are not developed. So they are, you know, driven by hormones, seeing this explicit material and kick-starting very risky behavior. And that is what we are facing today. I know it's kind of scary, but you know, that is the fact. Girls say they get the information from friends and magazines. I mean, I constantly get emails and telephone calls from Dolly and what are the other things these kids will read? All these sort of kiddie magazines. I not have time to do it, but I try to do it because I think this is what the kids are reading. And if at least some of us who are professionals and Christians can at least get in there and put something, you know, maybe they'll read the right thing. So, there are Australian websites, and these are on your paper there. The thing is, they're very informative sites. But the thing is, they're politically correct. So, they're value-free. Now, I put it to you, there is nothing called value-free. If you say something is value-free, it is by nature giving a set of values that say that it is okay, what it's saying. So these are, but they are very good sites for information, don't get me wrong. So if you go to those sites, you can get really good information. So it's that really sort of, they try to get that line between anything goes and just say no. And so is there, I put it to you in my book, there is no real value free. For instance, that's one of the things on one of the sites. They have what they call a game, which is supposed to teach students safe sex. It's basically about love bugs and a battle to protect yourself from advancing love bugs by shooting condoms at them. So can you see that's value-free education? So, you know, it's a great game. I mean, I enjoyed playing it. I mean, you get these love bugs and you're shooting condoms at them and how you get a score on how many you shoot. But can you see that message there? You know, it's not about, you know, protect yourself. It's not about, you know, the actual sexual activity and what it means, but protect yourself by using a condom. And I'm not saying that's a bad message. I think it's great that young people know about contraceptives and STIs, and we have to tell them that. And that's what we're going to look at in a few minutes, about age-appropriate information. But if this is for kids, and you know, it's like, where's the values within which this information? Information is important, but the values in which this information is couched is really the most important thing we need to do. So, parents, what do you do? You provide the context for this information, for choices and behavior. You as parents are change agents. You're the source of information. And I love that, you know, he's the little ones watching television and the parents have decided we interrupt this program for a family discussion about sex. You know. So you are the ones who will shape beliefs. You will influence behavior. What you show and tell your children is what they will remember. Think back on your own life. Think back of your earliest memories of relationships and how those have been role modeling for you. I'll go slow here because maybe this was a slide that I didn't put up for you. So these are what the kind of roles that parents play. Now, any group I speak to anywhere, there are questions about, but isn't sex education dangerous? Isn't there a problem about actually providing information too early? And, you know, that's a common question, and it's a very valid question. But these are the myths. All the research shows us that abstinence only till marriage education is not what we should be giving children. Let me reword that. The myth is abstinence only until marriage education works. In other words, if we teach children, just don't do it, but don't provide any framework for it, it doesn't work. That don't do it message, which is actually what we would like our children to learn, you know, wait till marriage, has to be couched within the larger framework of why we want you to do it. What is the value of staying till? Why do you want to keep this sexual activity? What does it mean? So what's the big deal about keeping it? So kids today don't just take it as mommy said it or the Bible says it. We want it because we know it is, the Bible says it, and it's God's perfect plan, apart from the fact that it also prevents them from getting all sorts of messed up lives. But it is very important for us to couch it in a larger message. And we need to understand this because the research coming out from mainly the States, where they have used a lot of, you know, just don't do it education, says it doesn't work. Because kids in the States are saying, okay, we've been asked to be, don't have sexual intercourse, so that's okay, we can have oral and anal sex, and having a lot more problems than if they had been having intercourse with sexual, with contraception. The other common myth is this: sex education encourages, I've said students, but young people, to become sexually active at a younger age. So if you teach them, then they'll run out and do it. False. They don't. All the research indicates that if educated appropriately at the appropriate age, delays the onset of activity, reduces the number of sexual partners. Of course, this is not research coming out from Christians, it's secular research, and reduces unplanned pregnancies and diseases. So education is empowering. This is in a secular context. So put that in a Christian context. So this is value-free education is so wonderful. So if we add to that our values of bringing up our children, it is immeasurably powerful. It is so valuable. And that is our call. So, What then? Okay, so we've done that. Teaching them about contraception encourages sexual activity. That too is not true. When you teach about contraception, but within a larger framework of education, it actually decreases sexual activity and reduces high risk. So just because they know it, they don't run out and do it. Okay, so what then should you be doing? What, when, how? So the next few minutes, I'm going to take you through from baby to teenager and just discuss some of the issues of what sort of issues there are at different ages and what can we as parents do. Now, this information is just as valid whether you're a Christian or a non-Christian, you know, believe in one God or you don't, but the point is that for us Christians, it is so valuable because we know that we are created in God's image and sex is such a wonderful gift, and it's this precious gift we want our children to appreciate. So sex education from toy to Twitter and cookies to biscotti. Let's see how we go. Starting off with babies, and this is one of my absolutely favorite cartoons, where the little boy says, last night I asked my parents where I came from, and we had a long talk about reproduction and contraception. I still don't know whether I'm Irish-American, Dutch-American, or German-American. So the message there is age-appropriate education. However, even before 3 years of age, children are very curious. And they can start sex education. So, you know, even your babies are at a stage when some information can be given them. You know, they experience erections. Those of your babies know that when you put them into a bath, or, you know, you're putting them to bed, you know, they have a little erection and nobody knows whether it's pleasurable. I mean, they can't tell you. So it's, you know, it just happens. It's just a reflex. It just happens. But, you know, there's some researchers, you know, researchers do the funniest things. I mean, there are some people who just sit watching children's expressions, you know, and when they get an erection, do they look happy or do they look sad? And they take pictures and, you know, they say that they look happy. I mean, okay, you know, I'm a sexologist. I'll believe my colleagues sometimes. So, children are curious. They will explore their bodies. And when they are able to talk, they can learn appropriate words for their body, like, you know, nose, head, stomach, penis, vagina. They can learn words. And I still remember doing a talk like this for parents some time ago, and this little two-year-old was sitting in the front, and he was sort of watching me for this full 40 minutes. And the mother said he went home, and that the next day he sort of doing something, and he suddenly looked at the mother and went, penis. And the mother went, very good, son. You get something for that 40 minutes. So kids can pick up words. So what can you do? The thing to do is avoid shame. Avoid shame and guilt about parts of the body and body functions. A baby, a little three-year-old touching his genitals. You know, I've known parents who say, oh, shame, shame, and push the hand away. You know, so he's not stimulating himself. It's just sort of, it's there, especially for a boy, you know. He's just sort of, suddenly, you know, there's a little like a gear lever there. Why wouldn't he hang on to it? Or, you know, you're bathing the sister and brother together and, you know, and she looks, oh, you know, look, there's something to hang on to in the bath. I mean, it's nothing sexual about it, you know, but your response could be quite traumatic to the child. Help children to feel good about their entire body. And you demonstrate intimacy and love. So even at the age of 2 and 3, what you and your partner, their father and mother do is a very strong image that they're getting. It's important even at that baby age to start teaching them that it's to say no if something is uncomfortable. And you think, but they're babies. But the point is, you know, child pornography, those of us who have studied and read things know that child porn has no age limit. And horrible though it is, we have to start teaching our children really, really young. I told you it wouldn't be easy today. Okay, so preschool, sending them off to preschool. So here's the young man coming from preschool, and the parents handed their report card, their sex ed report card, and he says, anatomy and physiology, A, relationships, A, family planning, A, sexual orientation, A, values education, A, communication skills, A, parenting, A. Way to go, mom, you made the honor roll. So, you know, parents have to start getting involved. And one of the things one of my research students did research, and she talked to parents, and a majority of parents said, they would actually like to be involved with schools in sex education programs. I don't know how Brisbane schools do it, but very few New South Wales schools actually involve parents in the whole sex education agenda and curriculum. And a lot of parents our student talked to said that they would like to be involved. So what are some of the characteristics? As we get into this 4 to 5 year old, the curiosity is really, really there. Those of you who have children of this age will know that. And at this time they ask, you know, baby questions. Where do babies come from? They like playing doctor, you know, touching and, you know, having a look. You know, why does my sister or why does the little girl from next door not have certain appendages that I carry around? And they recognize the difference of male and female. The fact that I'm a boy, I'm a girl, gender identity is established by about 3 years. And that's very fascinating because, you know, the behavior of girl and boy, there is a lot of nature, there's a biology behind it. And there's research, it's very fascinating. They took girls and they gave the girls boy toys, you know, they gave them trucks to play with, and they gave the boys like Barbie dolls to play with, and they sort of watched them, and the poor children, you know, the things that researchers put them through. But after a while, and they videoed them, and then they looked at the videos, they let the children play, and after a couple of days or whatever the time, they looked at the videos. And interestingly, what the boys were doing is they were picking the Barbie dolls, then they were picking up the Barbie dolls, turning one leg up, one leg down, and going bang, bang, bang with the Barbie doll. And the videos of the girls had the girls sitting around and going, that's daddy truck, and that's mommy truck, and that's baby truck. So you see, there is a lot of nature, and there's a lot of biology behind, and of course there's a lot of nurture and how children are brought up. But at this age, there is this strong identity of boy, girl. And this is an age also that certain gender variant behaviors come up and can be very traumatic to parents. And these are children whose behaviors don't fit typically into what boy expectation or girl expectations are. And that's normal too. Quite a few children just pass through a phase of wanting boys wanting to do girl things and girls wanting to do boy things. No relationship between them growing up to be homosexuals or transsexuals at that age. Some of them may, but some who are, you know, doing the right girl thing and boy thing may also. So the message I guess I'm trying to give is, yes, gender identity happens, but it's not something to be terribly upset about if a child doesn't fit ideally into it. How can parents be prepared? The main thing is to be comfortable. You need to be comfortable about your sexuality as husband and wife, and you need to discuss this as sex is private, it occurs at home, you know, you don't, what you do at home, touching yourself, not something you do in public, so public, private behavior. It's okay to explain about how babies got in to mommy, you know, especially if you're pregnant and there's an older child, explaining it, you know, in a simple way but an understandable way to the child is quite all right. And most important, encouraging your child to always come to you and keeping that communication open even when they are really, really young is really important. So we are moving through here. Okay, we are sending them off to school now. It's a scary time for all of us who send kids off to school the first time because it's a really anxious time. You're sending them out into the big bad world. And so they're going to start socializing, and they love socializing with their own gender. And this is a time when kids who don't fit into that gender stereotype tend to be bullied and teased. And so if you have a child who doesn't do the typical boy things, and nothing to say he's going to grow up to be gay. But maybe he's a kid who isn't the super masculine ball player. But maybe he's a musician. Maybe he likes to dance. And that's beautiful. But he is going to get teased by the group. And so an awareness of that, that kids are very gender behavior conscious at this age. And they start looking to peer and media. So this is the time when kids are beginning to be aware of the Britney Spears of this world. And so you should be aware too, what they're watching, what they're looking at. I know they're only babies. I mean, at 7 years old, they're just your baby. But this is an age when a lot of kids have mobile phones. And they are getting pictures on mobile phones, even littlies, and sharing them. One of my students, I teach a graduate program in sexual health, one of my students in a discussion board said that her little daughter, who was 8 years old, had been shown a picture of a woman having sex with a horse. Don't ask me, even I couldn't imagine how that happens. But anyway, somebody had shown a picture. Another one of her classmates showed a picture on a mobile phone. So, I mean, it's happening. So we need to make sure that we are able to discuss these. How can you be prepared? This is really, really important, because at this time you need to look for teachable moments. And this is just a few teachable moments. I mean, you know, if you have a cat or a dog or something at home and it's getting pregnant, and that's a nice sort of convenient way of talking about, you know, pregnancies and babies and how they get in. And so it's a great, so look for moments. I don't know whether you guys have these AMI boards on your, you know, the big notice boards. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. But we have these huge ones, you know. And like one of my, again, my students, they tell me the most wonderful stories. So she's like driving along and two little boys in the back seat, and suddenly there's Twitter, 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 and like, "Mom, what's sex?" "Oh, darling, I'll talk to you later." So they're driving along. And, "Ma'am, what's impotence?" It's a great conversation too on the way to school. But the point is, these are teachable moments. I mean, not when you're on the freeway. But, you know, these are messages that you can later on say, "Darling, you remember you said this, you know, let's..." Because it's there in their face. And you can't get away from it. And that's just a clip I got from, I don't know whether it's really from this Harry Potter one, it's a sort of scenes that was cut out. But even the sort of kiddie movies are coming with fairly sexual, sensual, even if it's not straight body, it's that suggestive stuff, like the Britney Spears video we watched. So you have to be very certain that is you and not the internet or their peers. So we don't want sex to be behind the cycle shed information. We want the sex education to come from you. You need to be, I mean, you, everything else in school, sex education behind the bicycle shed. You have to be prepared. Your behavior at home will teach them gender stereotypes, like this little boy going, "That's it, that's the facts of life, mom washes dishes and you dry them." So, you know, your behavior, the roles you play, the love, the intimacy you exhibit at this school age, this early school age, are the values that your children will pick up. You know, while, you know, it's fun, but it's also hugely important. And we don't take enough notice of that. We just think they are still children. But they are recording all this. This is also the age at which they need to be thinking, you need to be thinking of talking to them about puberty. And, you know, so this little girl, and that's the puberty elephant that's come to visit, and the little girl says, "Do my parents know you're here?" And says, "Not likely." It's amazing the number of young people, you know, in the classes I teach, who say, "My parents never told me anything." Girls, "My parents never told me anything about menstruation or puberty, or when I started bleeding, or just before, they said something about how to use a pad, but they never explained really about what's happening. And that's terrible. That is terrible. You know, we really, really need to talk to our children and get them ready. Not just girls, but boys also. All the research shows that boys want to talk, and they want to talk to their fathers, and fathers are not talking to their sons. And whether it's boys or girls, they are saying that the mothers are the source of information. And that's good. I mean, hooray for mothers. But the men have a role to play. And I think it's part of the church's role to empower parents to take this role, this proactive role of teaching their children about sexuality in a value framework. Okay, so preteens. What do we know about preteen years? So, characteristics, this is a time when normal becomes a big thing. Am I normal? Boys start having wet dreams. Girls are starting to develop breasts. Am I normal? Oh, the media, the media chains, the shops love this. You know, you got all the bras, you know, padded bras for littlies. And it's like, oh, you know, be like your friends. You know, wear a padded bra, like you're 9 years old, and, you know, wear a bra so that you can look like Paris Hilton or Britney Spears. It's just scary. You know, and it's like all the sexy underwear that's being marketed for children. And of course, if your friends in school have them, you want them. And so you're driven by the peer. And you know, kids are so frightened. And they want to live up to things. They see all these sort of enhanced, airbrushed images. It's very frightening. So it's a self and personal. They value privacy. You know, don't enter their room without knocking. It's really important. And they don't really want to ask you, because this is the no. For those of you who have kids in that pre-teen age, you know, a grunt is enough. You know, that's your happy. You really should be grateful if you get a grunt in response sometimes, because they don't want to really ask you, but you should be there for them, and they really want to hear it from you. They don't want to ask, but they want you to tell them. It's a bit like Norbert, who struggled with expressing his fatherly words of wisdom. So his instructions tended to be short and to the point, like Ephesians 6. Don't smoke, don't chew, don't go with girls who do. So, you know, we need to be able to talk a little better than Norbert, but talk. So how can parents in these preteen years be prepared? Do not be ashamed or hesitant to share your values and attitudes, but be gentle and sensitive, because they could get very different messages from their peers. But do not be ashamed to tell them what you believe in. They want boundaries. They want you to tell them what your values are. Children value boundaries. We are anxious and nervous. For goodness sake, they are your children, you know. Take a stand and tell them, and let them know what your values and your beliefs are. And be cyber smart. And that's a great website, actually, the Cyber Smart Government site. Got some really good tips on being cyber smart with your children. Let's face it, our 5-year-olds are a lot more cyber smart than a lot of us are. So, you know, we need to upskill and be ready for the kind of thing kids will throw up to you. And don't be afraid to discuss what is normal. Be honest. Don't be ashamed to say, I don't know. Let's go check it out. Let's read it somewhere. This is, again, some recent research and the kind of comments that young 12-year-old said. I'm worried that I still have no breasts. Boys don't like girls who are flat. It's a 12-year-old. Being on your own is lonely. People look at you as if you've got two heads. A 12-year-old boy. He told me it's bad for a boy's health to get hard and not have sex. 13-year-old girl being talked to by her boyfriend. My last boyfriend said sex leads to love. The message there that, you know, I never slept with him because I didn't think that was true. But my friends all say that it works, and I'm confused. Can you see the messages? These are 12 and 13-year-olds. You see, we must know that we need to take a stand. We need to place sexuality education within a value system. But you're not alone. There are other groups, some of them Christian, some of them non-Christian. But these are three sites. I don't know whether any of you have seen or read any of Melinda Tankhurst's work, but she does a lot of work around the sexualization and the pornographication, as she calls it, of children. And those are really good websites, not necessarily run by Christians. Melinda is a Christian, but, and I'm not sure about Collective Shout, but they're all about this understanding what the media is doing to your children, especially the young ones. Finally, we move into teenage, and that's the kind of age when the teenager comes home and says, Mom, can you answer some questions for me about sex and contraception? And Mom goes, ooh, you know, I'm not ready to answer those. So it's really, really important, because as all of us who have been through bringing up a teenager know, the teen's brain is really amazing. So, you know, there's this big, what we call the birds and the bees lobe. So, you know, it's all about, a lot about sex and then rebellion and turbocharged rebellion, self-image prone to bruising and a fitting in gland and wanting to watch every episode of The Simpsons. And then, of course, there's an indestructibility cortex and the love and disdain for parents sort of. So, I mean, it's in fun, but the point is we know kids have complex brains and they're not easy. I know. Email me. I'll send it to you. I love it. It's one of my favorites. And then, of course, they are hormone driven. So, you know, there's a lot of sex bubbling up in teenagers. And so, as my pink and blue dragons, and I love the Puritan holding the reins, you know, that was a real, you know, reformed Puritan holding the reins there. And I love the pink one with the chastity belt. You know, so it's like, you know, they're raring to go. And again, what you values you give them is what is going to shape them. And this is a very important time, because their adult sexual behavior, their desire, what turns them on as adults is being established now. What they see, what they do, what the kind of things they begin to think is sexually arousing. If they're learning from internet sites and all they are going to see are airbrushed images of perfect female genitalia and all they see are silicone-filled boobs, that's what's going to remain in their brains as what is a ideal woman. And that's what they're going to then influence what turns them on as adults. If pornography and abusive sex is what they see, they are going to believe the rape myths that every woman likes to be treated roughly. And that every woman is going to say she really wants it. She just said no, but she really wanted it. Every woman is a slut. I mean, I have heard, and this is told me by a minister actually, where he was in a Bible study and a young man said, well, all girls are dogs really. And it was like, oh. And you know, this is like young people of today, and it's very sad. Because, you know, we, just because we are in the church, we are not immune to these. And we know, again, based on research, and that high parent-child communication is associated with late intercourse, decrease in the number, this is secular research, increased use of contraception, and an ability to discuss sexual issues with confidence. So communication with your children is really important. And we have the knowledge, we have the message. You know, we are so happy to get out on the streets and evangelize people, and that's beautiful. But here are our children, and we have the wonderful message of good sex. Why are we not sharing it with them? We as parents, we as the church. So teenagers are sexual, whether they are sexually active or not. So they are sexual. They are sexual beings. So we have to acknowledge the fact that the kids are sexual, and then within our value system encourage them to discuss their feelings and their behaviors. They're very vulnerable. You know that. I mean, kids are so vulnerable to peer and media pressure. And in relationships, they do have the capability of understanding the consequences. Yes, their brains, those decision-making brains, are still maturing, but they have the capability, and it's in your hands as parents and church, as youth workers, to help them develop that. So it was 15. My eldest daughter at school showed a video from their mobile phone of women having sex with a horse. Sometimes I think the ads say to me, this is from a child, if you want to make it big in the real world, then you have to be sexy. You want people to give you attention, then you have to be sexy. This is from a girl. This is called raunch culture. This is where girls in today's R-A-U-N-C-H, raunch culture, where girls today are seeing popularity as being sexy. If I am sexy, if I hitch my skirt up a little and show my beautiful long legs that stretch from my ankles to my armpits, then I am going to be popular. That is how I am going to be powerful. If I have pretty boobs, then I'm going to be powerful. And parents, some parents will play into this. In America, I said this in the morning's talk too, I have a friend who's a plastic surgeon, and he said there are places in the States where parents are actually buying their children, their daughters, breast implants as Christmas presents or graduation gifts. Why do women today want to get Brazilians? For those of you who think Brazilians are people who live in Brazil, they are actually about taking the pubic hair off, because they want their genitals to look young. They want them to look like young, prepubescent girls, or like the porn stars who seem to always have hairless pubes. And surgery today in Australia, there's surgery being done for what we call labioplasties. This is girls, young girls, who are going and getting their genitals surgically prettied up to look like little rosebuds in the Playboy magazine. Labioplasties. This is real life. This is what young people are faced with. And this is being driven by the media, the porn, the internet porn, everything that's available, that's driving people to say, this is what is sexual and beautiful. Young boys are beginning to see girls as sluts, basically, based on the porn images they see, believing the rape myths, which we talked about a little while ago, that, you know, all girls want it, they just say no. Objectifying, you know, you look at a girl and suddenly she's, all you can think is sex and porn. It's very frightening. How you as parents should be prepared. It's very important to articulate your family's values, your religious values to children regarding sexual activity and intercourse. Do not be afraid. Later on in life, they will actually thank you for discussing your values with them. You will not turn them off. Kids at this age want boundaries. They want you to discuss with them importance of committed relationships. They want to hear it. They want to know why you and mommy and daddy, why do you stay together? What is it about commitment? Why is casual sex not a good idea? There is no such thing as casual sex. And any couple who make love, when you make love, when you have sexual activity, you bond to that person. When you break up after bonding in sexual activity, it's like using a bit of super glue to stick yourself to someone and then ripping yourself apart. I do teen talks, and one of the things I do is pass around a used toothbrush, you know, the ones that's really bad. Like, if it's not bad enough, I sort of scrub it around the edge of the toilet bowl before the lecture, you know, and then I take it around, I disinfect it before I take it to them. But I show it, pass it around and say, would you use it? And they all say, of course we won't. Then I say, why? And we put up some reasons. It's like, we don't know where it's been. We don't know what's on it. We don't know what germs are on it. And then I say, but then when you have sexual activity with somebody you don't know, and they go, oh, you know, you don't know where it's been. You don't know what's on it. You don't know what germs are in it. And you don't want to use the toothbrush. But, you know, you want to have sex with someone you don't know. And sometimes shock tactics work too. But it is true. And it is okay for you to share things, your feelings with children. And providing them support, because the media and their friends are going to tell them they are freaks. I'm at university, and I have students come to me, and not just Christians. I'm really amazed that students come to talk to me, and more of the girls who come to talk to me are actually Islamic. They're Muslim girls, and they come and they cry, and they say their people call them ice princess, and you know, because they won't have sex and they won't have oral sex with boys, and you know, so they need your support. Or maybe the Christian girls are all getting their support from their parents. But the point is then, that's true, because the Muslim girls dare not go home and talk to their parents. So maybe, you know, that, and that's so important for you to support them in those decisions. So you give them the values, reinforce it by your behavior, and support them in the decisions you make and they make. You've already looked at that. So what then should we know? Sex is a gift to humanity from God, and it is a wonderful and exciting, but also a very fragile and precious gift. You are the keepers of your children's sexuality and the challenge. So how will you fulfill this wonderful responsibility when you take that baby in your hands, brand new, just a few months, just a few weeks, and like Kai over there, and the future, you know, you think their sexuality is in your hands, really, as mum and dad. Just don't leave it too long, you know, as in the nursing home where he says, you know, sit down, son, it's time we had that little man-to-man talk about the birds and the bees. Current state of sex education in the United States, query Australia. I just love this cartoon, you know, it's because it's got my email on it. So if any of you want to talk to me, I'm happy to answer emails if you want to email me. This is extraterrestrials who go around saying, sex, sex, yes, sex, sex, sex. Well, you know, if you had an extraterrestrial here today, that's probably what he would say. What are you guys talking about? Not sure, but it's a hot topic back in Brisbane today. So, you know, just that. Okay, so that's the end of our formal discussion.
Okay, well, let's put our hands together for Patricia. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's been a great pleasure.